Returning to the show today, we have the incredible, the unapologetic Alex Svetsky, and we get into the state of the world, the dependency of the masses, and trying to find meaning and holding Bitcoin in an uncertain world. This is The Death of Nuance with Alex Svetsky. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. We have got a great chat today. Alex Svetsky and I managed to sit down for, quite some time. We just kind of ranted for ages, and there is no official start to this. I just tried to find a good place to cut into, because we just kind of started chatting, and then it was like an hour and a half later, we were like, did we actually have a show, or are we just having a conversation? It was really awesome. And very, very happy to have him on the show again, particularly with the crazy state of the world right now. But before we get into it, I want to thank our sponsors, and we've got a new one. And this is an awesome product that I have only recently stumbled upon, but have been loving it so far. This is the BitBox Hardware Wallet. And I'm really surprised I hadn't stumbled upon this one before. It's open source, has a Bitcoin-only version, so your attack surface is as small as possible. It's Swiss-made with security and privacy in mind. The backup is actually on a micro SD card, so you don't have to write down your seed on a piece of paper and potentially expose it. It has a very simple native desktop app and interface, which I love, and an in-app walkthrough. And it's legit one of the lowest-cost hardware wallets out there, so it's kind of perfect for if you're trying to get a good hardware wallet for a family or friend during the holiday season. That is the BitBox. It's the BitBox O2. Check it out by going to guyswan.com/BitBox and make sure to use my link. Again, that is the BitBox at guyswan.com/BitBox. And of course, for those coins that you don't put into cold storage and you want available on your mobile, Hexa Wallet cannot be beat. Multiple accounts with varying degrees of security and built-in batching. Hexa Wallet is where it's at. You can find them at hexawallet.io. But literally, we're going to have an entire stack of Bitcoin wallet solutions on this show before it's over. We've got the BitBox hardware wallet. We've got the Hexa for mobile. Now we just need a good Lightning wallet and maybe like a deep physical storage option, like, you know, one of those steel plates or something. So we'll see. But a thank you to BitBox and to Hexa Wallet for supporting Bitcoin Audible. All right, so let's go ahead and get into today's chat with Alex Svetsky. We actually talk at the beginning. You cannot see it unless you're watching the YouTube version of this. But he's got a little wristband that says, I'm exempt from wearing a mask. And then he also has a lanyard that says the same thing. And so that is what we are talking about right at the beginning that kind of has me cackling a little bit. But with that as context, let's go ahead and get into our chat with Alex Svetsky on the state of the world and the death of nuance.
Cool, cool, cool. All right, man.
I'll brighten this down a little bit here.
This is my little, where is it?
Oh, nice. Did you just order that online?
I made some up, yeah. So like I've got a whole series of things. So I've got that. I've got this. Like it's like a lanyard.
That's hilarious.
And people
does
like
it work?
Why aren't you wearing a mask? And I just sort of show them that. And it just goes to show how like blind to authority this whole thing is. They're like, okay, no worries.
No shit, that works. It
fucking works, man. It works. There's only one place where I actually, you know, got into a bit of an
hustle.
Argument with someone, and they're like, look, you know, sorry, we can't accept that. And I was like, yeah, fuck you. So I just left, like, it was some shop. But otherwise, man, it works everywhere. It worked on the fucking flight. It worked on the airport. It worked on the plane. It worked fucking everywhere.
Wow. Everybody is just doing what they're told.
That's it.
If there's even a semblance of authority, they don't care. That's so crazy.
It is, man.
God, that's
That's hilarious and frightening at the exact same time.
Right. Yeah. Like, I've got a friend of mine here, and she's a bit conformist when it comes to this stuff. She's like, I think the mask thing is stupid, but I just wear one because of respect for other people. And I'm like, what do you mean respect for other people? I go, you're actually disrespecting them by perpetuating the lie. She's like, I don't want to cause any dramas and stuff. And I'm like, here's one of my lanyards because I've got a couple extra ones. She's like, no one's going to believe that. And I'm like, you'd be fucking surprised. And then when she was with me at the shops and people were like, we walked out later. She's like, what's wrong with these people? I said, there's nothing wrong with the people. I said, sorry, I didn't say that. I said, that just shows you what you mentioned earlier is the, just the obedience to blind authority because someone said so. And yeah. Funny, that actually ties into that article that I wrote recently, The Resistance Is Not Futile, like where I talk about fiat authority versus natural authority. And, natural authority is something that's emergent. Like it comes from building competence and experience and, knowledge, et cetera. Whereas fiat authority is just, I woke up on the left side of the bed today, so we'll wear a mask. Yeah. Tomorrow I woke up on the right side of the bed, masks don't work. but it's science, trust the science.
It's like it feels like just what's convenient. Like, I don't even know if that's the word. It's literally like whatever is being pushed by whatever person appears to be in charge. It doesn't really matter. It's just I'm going to figure out how to excuse whatever they said so that we can follow what they said. Like it's just like this constant perpetuation of just who's in charge rather than caring what it even means or if it's even useful. Like they just go hunting for something, and in this, we are in the age of like bias justification. Like we've got a big, we've got a machine called Google that is just a tool for just confirming our bias, like we can find the statistic or the chart or the whatever it is that tells our story and just ignore the 10,000 other charts and statistics,
Well, exactly. And I think that's actually an interesting point. There is like this idea of, I saw a meme a little while ago where you got all these people like, give me a source for that, show me the, it's like instead of relating it. Yeah, exactly. You can get a source for fucking anything. So that notion of show me a source for something has become completely irrelevant. And it's these days like a really good signal to know whether you're talking to a deep thinker or to know whether you're talking to a fucking, a sophist is like, just show me a fucking source means nothing anymore. It's like, can you draw this back, using some sort of deductive logic to a natural truth, like, or to something that is, if I use the word a priori, it's like, it's true and it's always true and it's true for everyone. Does it relate back to something like that? Or is there a bunch of contradictions along the way? Or inconsistencies. And if there's these inconsistencies, then, you can deduce that something is false without requiring a source. And that's kind of, I think, this whole, this age of, what I call state institutionalization in the form of schooling has no longer taught people to think. And I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here. No one's thinking anymore. No one's inquiring. Anymore, everyone's fucking regurgitating other people's crap. And as long as they found something that's been regurgitated by someone else who might have some letters on their name because they've spent all their life in fucking academia and not in the real world, they'll take it as true, irrespective of whether it actually makes sense in the real world or not. And that's a disease, man. It's therein is the actual pandemic. It's we completely fucking lost our minds and have submitted all rational and critical thought to and deferred that to fiat authority, just made up top down, opinionated authority. Wild.
It's we have an obedience problem. We have an obedience and an inability to actually just look at something and think outside of the context of what we are supposed to think. Like, and it's so funny, like as soon as you introduce an element that is unexpected, you can see it in a lot of people. Like when you try to have a conversation about this stuff, as soon as you introduce an element that doesn't fit either the bad side or the good side that is in their narrative structure, as soon as something is outside of it, they literally like lock up. They don't even know what to do with it. You know, like they don't know how to assess it if it doesn't like cleanly fit into their little thing. I mean, like, God forbid you like start talking bad about like the masks or whatever, but then give legitimate information about whether or not there's, you know, some sort of, is there even a novel virus here? You know, it's like, and you know, maybe there is, like, it seems to be that there is at least a disease somewhere out there and there is information to back it up. But like, it's like one or the other. It's like, you either don't believe in it or you believe in lockdowns and masks and all of it. There's no middle ground. You
can't. Well, there's no nuance, right? We've killed nuance.
Yeah.
There was a great saying that I saw on it was some Bitcoiner just popped up a tweet, and he said, what was it? Tyranny is the deliberate removal of nuance. And I think that's such a beautiful saying, because that's like, I mean, when you look throughout history, you know, all tyranny came as a result of beating the nuance out of things.
Yeah.
You know, there's no ability to, Eric July sort of talks about this sometimes, you know, where he talks about, you know, I can have a position that is for drugs, for example, against the criminalization of drugs and against the war on drugs, but simultaneously I can hold a position that I'm not personally for drugs.
Yeah.
I don't need them, I don't take them. And this is what,
yes,
you know, a lot of,
is horrible, crack is horrible. No, you shouldn't beat people up and put them in a cage over it. Like
exactly. Yeah. And that nuance of thought is like, it's missing today. Because again, I think it all stems from this, this poison or this disease that, you know, authority, like, you know, we sort of emerged as human beings and we built, like, I'm reading a book at the moment called Energy and Civilization. And it talks about how like, the first actual innovation, that, you know, propelled Homo sapiens forward was like bipedalism. It allowed us to use less energy in movement. And then we sort of, and again, I'm really paraphrasing here, I'm only at the first chapter.
Sure.
But, yeah. You know, then, you know, we kind of evolved into our intestinal tract and our digestive system shrinking. And then, you know, we started, it was the ability to hunt and scavenge for meat that allowed us to have high density food. And that's sort of how we evolved, and that enabled the brain to evolve. And then as that happened, it then gave us, you know, space or time and energy to think about other things. And you sort of see the better use of energy and the spread of civilization sort of move in lockstep. Now, as that complexity increased, you know, we naturally and organically converged upon, you know, having to build little mini hierarchies of competence that, you know, so that we could collaborate and actually work together functionally, because competence is the actual the natural dictator towards it's the natural dictum towards actually performing something in a way that yields either better energy production or more efficient use of a resource, or, you know, better working together, like more value.
Yeah.
And, you know, today we no longer.
Sorry. It's like, particularly when like the mind becomes the greatest source of like directing our actions to achieve better efficiency or to innovate on an idea, like the idea becomes the value of what we like actually do. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Exactly. Like, and that idea of competence actually is like, without that, you cannot build any form of functional hierarchy. It always falls over. And the beauty of competence, it's always like, it's this source of truth that, you know, when we veer away from competence, we inevitably end up fucking up, and we have to veer back towards this center, this truth around competence in order to maintain the, you know, the structural integrity of the hierarchy that we're building. And again, today we've just thrown out all competence. It doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter how good you are. It matters what skin color you have, what fucking gender you are, what, you know, fucking sexual orientation you are, what fucking minority you are. Like, competence is like second rate now. It doesn't matter anymore. Like the only thing that matters is what
rate, I would say. it's down there. It's not second.
Well, the thing is, because you can't get rid of it, right? So it's always going to exist. It's always going to exist because, like, you know, I always, you know, this idea of, you know, thinking you can fly by running and jumping off the edge of the cliff. And, you know, in the first few seconds, because you jumped up, you're like, oh, I beat gravity. And then, you know, a few seconds later, as you start, like, falling down, you know, you realize, no, dickhead, you didn't. And, like, if we kind of, you know, zoom out in terms of our, like, view on society, like the last couple hundred years where this real emergence of fiat authority has like dominated, that from an evolutionary standpoint is like that 2 seconds or 3 seconds of jumping off the cliff. Like we think we've, you know, discovered that we're somehow more intelligent than nature. You know, like we know better because we said so, like fiat is the way. And you know, we're going to get a rude awakening. We're going to get that Ayn Randian rude awakening where, you know, the structures that we've organically built, you know, not by decree, but by just figuring it out, like this emergent, you know, bottom up, not top down. As we start eating that away and you know, the things that support us don't exist anymore, then we'll start to realize, oh, maybe competence does matter. It's like, you know.
As soon as you start to hold something above competence, you realize that everything, the glue that sticks everything together, is competence. And it's really interesting too, because like the information age, like I really thought that, and maybe it was just kind of like an order of an operations thing, that like I had too simplistic of a view of how like things were going to unfold. But like I thought, you know, all the freedom of information, having access to everything that was on the internet, was going to, and in some ways it has, was going to make us smarter and was going to make us, you know, grant us access to all of these new tools. And in some ways it's hardened our lack of intelligence. Like in so many ways it like, and I feel like that endless ocean of information has partially reinforced, or maybe the word is exposed, how much we were just not thinking, that we were just deferring to an authority. I mean, I can't tell you how many times that somebody has shown me their source or backed up an argument that links to an article that goes nowhere. Somewhere like I'll go hunting. They'll even link other articles that write about the same idea or make the same claim, and there's no source to any of it. It's just people just writing two pages of garbage and they think that's a source. Or God forbid, you know, it's backed by science because there's a study, and study is the survey study is literally the garbage bin of science. Like almost always unbelievably biased. Like they do a subset of like, I'm going to ask 3,000 people. They call up random people on the phone. Half of them probably can't even understand the questions. They ask them 5 questions. They draw up a chart from it. And then they think they make some elaborate claim about like broad societal trends. And I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
And there's so many of them. There's so many of them. It's like trying to sort through shit coins. It's the most painful thing in the world.
it's you know what? It's actually worse than, because I think, you know, all of academia is basically shit coinery. Just, you know, that's what it's become. Because like if I think about remember that movie recently. I mean, all of them are the same, like fucking forks over knives and all the vegan stuff. Like, what's that recent one, Game Changers or whatever it was?
Oh, yeah.
And, where it's like, oh, yeah, vegan's good, meat eating's bad. And, like, there was a guy who, like, drilled down into it. He's like, okay, this guy who's apparently the strongest guy in the world, he broke the record, like, you know, 7 years ago. But they, you know, they position him like he's the strongest man now or something. And he's like just an anomaly, like a genetic anomaly. Whereas every single other person in the past and now currently who's ever been the strongest man have all been meat eaters. It's like this one anomaly and they base the science around this one guy. Or when they do their studies about like, you know, different people who are healthy, they pick a, you know, a fat American on the SAD diet, right? Like the standard American diet, who's fucking drinking soda pop, eating French fries, eating McDonald's fucking hamburgers, you know, working all day, not training. And they're like, look, he's a meat eater and he's unhealthy. Here's his markers. And then they pick someone who's like a fucking yoga chick who trains every day, just happens to be a vegan living in Venice. And they're like, see, she's healthy. So vegans are healthier than meat eaters. It's like, wow, what a rigorous scientific process you went through to identify this. But it's everywhere now, right? It's no longer like it's coming back to your point, it's like, you know, this floodgate of information that opened up, you know, has it exposed, you know, the collectivist stupidity or collective stupidity of humanity, or has it, you know, further drowned us in confusion and misinformation and actually made us stupider? I don't know. It's a tough one, man, because, you know, it's almost like another one of those bell curves, right? It's, you know, no information on this side is, you know, like you're like a caveman. And then sort of somewhere in the middle of the bell curve is like too much information and you're like some sort of modern millennial fucking SJW who thinks you know everything because you read the news. And then you sort of go down to the other side of the bell curve, which is like true intelligence doesn't require a plethora of information. It requires understanding of basic principles that are timeless. You don't need more information. You don't need more news. You don't need more fucking studies and sources and, you know, fake science or whatever else. It's just, does it align with principles that, you know, are like a priori truths? Are they true all the time for everyone and for everything? Like, and that part of real science, like math-based science, is gone. But opinion science is sort of that's the era that we're in. And I don't know, man, like, you know, technology is neither good or bad. Like, you know, we're both smart enough, I think, to understand that. It's, you know, it's how it's used that matters. But it's a fucking weird time, man. Like, the pace at which hysteria can, like, overwhelm people, the pace at which lies and bullshit can, you know, propagate throughout the world. It's concerning, man. Like, I've lost respect for so many people that I thought were actually smart this year. And like looking at, you know, the reaction, the behavior and things like that, I'm like, whoa, man, like, really? Like, so it's a strange thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a eye-opening year nonetheless. Yeah.
Which part of the state are you in?
I'm in North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. Yeah. So you're mostly north side.
Yeah. And it's not so bad here, now. Stuff opened back up recently. A couple of our favorite restaurants closed down for good. But theaters recently opened back up. They're at like fourth capacity or something like that. But I don't know, aside from the fact that everybody's got crap over their face, it's somewhat normal in the area. Back to the point about you're talking about like all this information and stuff and how, you know, technology in general, like I totally agree is unbiased, like it doesn't really care, like it's not good, it's not evil. I do still tend to think that there's a general trend, but sometimes like kind of in the sovereign individual thesis, you know, that technology by its getting like in the same way that technology gets more microscopic, it also gets more individualized. And just through the normal splitting, the normal evolution and mixing of technology, But what's funny is that like talking about how, like, you know, in that bell curve, you're when you're in the height and you have all this information, it's like too much information can be just as damaging and as blinding as not enough information.
Yep.
And in this day and age, it's almost like it's actually reinforced all of our just our bad practices. That if we have less information, we might actually have a hindrance on a bad process. Like if we have a bad way to think about it or a bad way to go about figuring out the truth, with less information, it might be subject to fewer errors. whereas when we're given an ocean of information, it's just like, this is the golden age of cherry picking. Like there's a billion cherries to pick, no matter what you want to pick them for.
Yep.
So you never don't have an option to go after. And this can lead to seemingly convincing arguments for anything, because like you said, people don't know how to go back to first principles. People don't know how to let go, like take the glasses off for a freaking second and look at the broader picture and put the whole thing in context, so that it's actually meaningful information. We're all kind of attached to these ridiculous narratives that were never backed up, but nobody even questions. Nobody tries to prove or disprove anymore. They're just taken for granted.
Yeah, the thing you mentioned actually about cherry picking is interesting, because I was speaking to a guy the other day and mentioned that, you know, this probably stems also from the issue of removing nuance as a concept in society, or consistently removing nuance, or not thinking deeper than the first level is, you know, we've gone on this hunt for abundance, or, you know, this pursuit of abundance. And in the process of pursuing abundance, we've created so much excess crap. Like we've confused actually that the notion of abundance with the notion of excess. Like, you know, that there's no more, like, you know, for example, you know, consumption and production, right? We no longer measure, you know, economic growth or productivity or, you know, progress in terms of production. We measure it in terms of consumption. And, you know, we think that's somehow a way to understand how abundant things are. And it goes for information. It goes for, you know, things and stuff we don't fucking need and we can't afford. It goes for the amount of money that's being created. It goes for the amount of opinions. It goes for, the, you know, like all this stuff is, you know, sort of has resulted from this idea that we've discarded the notion of scarcity. And that this is what I actually love about Bitcoin is it's that counterbalancing force, and it reintroduces the importance and the sanctity almost of scarcity. Like the most valuable things that we know of throughout all our lives, and we intuitively understand this, are scarce. Like it's our loved ones, you know, our family, you know, our mother, father, brother, sister, like they're fundamentally scarce. You can't just fucking print them the copy of your mom or your dad. Like, you know, it doesn't work that way unless the ECB had their way, right? Or the Fed. But, you know, you can't print more time. You know, you can't print more energy. You can't print more effort. And, you know, in our pursuit of abundance, we've kind of thrown all of that out the window. It's like now the nuclear family doesn't matter anymore because we're apparently all a fucking family, right? You know, the amount of money doesn't matter anymore.
It just means that we're intimate and like we're intimate with nobody. Like
exactly.
We have nobody close to us. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just this homogenous fucking sludge, right? So we've kind of, you know, abundance is actually, again, abundance is not bad, but it's like, it's about how do we apply it where it counts? And this is the first principles thinking. And this is the idea of nuance is that, you know, abundance actually becomes a poison when it's not balanced with scarcity. And there are things on the planet and in life and in the universe that are fundamentally scarce. And as a result, we need to, at least in the dimension within which we operate, right? We operate in, you know, the four dimensions of fucking space and time, and like within that dimension, like time is finite, energy is finite, like, you know, family is finite, you know, the the Mona Lisa is finite. You know, we can create as many copies as we want. You know, it ain't the same Mona Lisa. So it's scarcity is fundamentally important, but it's been vilified as this evil thing that we must abolish from the earth. And in the process, what we're doing is we're burning through all our resources, whether, you know, natural resources, whether cognitive resources, whether, you know, human resources, our time, our energy, like we're burning through all of it, all this capital stock that we've spent tens of thousands of years building up organically, emergently, you know, but by not by decree, but by figuring it out, by you know, finding our way through, you know, doing what works and then losing by doing what doesn't work. You know, we're burning through that capital stock now because we're blindly pursuing consumption for the sake of abundance, as opposed to, you know, coming back to, you know, the natural laws around, like, you know, time preference and patience and, you know, valuing that which is finite. And yeah.
Those things that are finite, those things that are scarce are what give us meaning. Like those are really, and what we've done is we've thrown the meaningful pursuit out just for the sake of consuming as much as possible. We don't have a direction anymore. We just have a you know, dictate of just like produce as much as possible. And it doesn't matter what we're producing, just as long as we get as much of it as we can.
You actually touch on another powerful point is meaning versus happiness. I think actually, you know, the one thing that I disagree with, you know, was it, who said the pursuit of happiness? Was that Ben Franklin?
I think so. Was it
Franklin? Okay, one of the founding fathers. So that's one of the things I disagree with them about is this idea of like, you know, whatever the saying was and, you know, ends with the pursuit of happiness. I think, you know, I subscribe to much more to the thought around people like Viktor Frankl or Alfred Adler or Jordan Peterson, etc., who sort of drive this idea that, you know, it's not happiness that we need to be pursuing. Happiness is like this fleeting byproduct when you're in the pursuit of meaning. And again, meaning, pursuing meaning is hard. It's, you know, it's difficult. It's painful. You know, it comes with challenges, but, you know, meaning is scarce. You can't find infinite meaning. There's no such thing as abundant meaning because if everything means everything, you know, there's no hierarchy of like priority or the ability for you to understand what actually means more to you. So
it's all relative, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at the end of the day, but like you kind of said, we've lost touch and direction with, you know, with reality, and we're pursuing happiness for the sake of happiness. And that's a really dangerous pursuit because you can find happiness through fucking injecting yourself with heroin. You can find happiness through buying shit you don't need that you can't afford just so you can get another, you know, hit of happiness. You can find happiness by, you know, cheating on your loved one. You can find happiness by, you know, blowing it on, you know, coke and hookers. Like like happiness is a really dangerous pursuit. If that is the end goal, whereas, you know, if meaning is the pursuit, and, you know, finding some sort of depth in life, you know, happiness is just like a natural, it's a side effect. It's a byproduct of that. But, you know, to pursue meaning, necessitates, longer term thinking. It necessitates, sacrificing something from the present, you know, for the potential of something in the future. And that requires, you know, really changing your time preference. It really requires you, you know, adopting patience and, you know, the classic delayed gratification, the marshmallow experiment, right? Like it really requires that as opposed to, you know, as opposed to just burning your future for the sake of today. And I think, you know, tying that back with one final point is like this, you know, the rise of kind of like Eastern mysticism and like, you know, Eckhart Tolle and the power of now and all that sort of stuff. I think those concepts, which are really powerful for like, you know, personal, let's call it like balance and, you know, meditative state and like, you know, like natural personal peace, because we've, again, removed nuance, you know, we've just sort of taken the idea of the power of now and say, oh yeah, look, Eckhart Tolle's stuff, you know, makes me, you know, feel better, makes me feel more at peace. So let's apply the power of now to everything in society. So, I want a car. I want it now. I want a credit. I want it now. I want a chocolate. I want it now. It's like, no. The power of now was like, you know, applicable to this thing, not to fucking everything. So this is, again, where nuance and critical thinking is so important, but it's so missing is, you know, particularly with this, you know, modern millennial generation, you know, they buy into these fucking retards, like what's his name, that Jay Shetty scammer, like, you know, who goes and he's this dude who pretended he was a monk, you know, like he literally lied about going to caves and meditating. Wow. ended up on Oprah, and all he's done his entire career is like plagiarized everyone else's quotes. Like everything from Tony Robbins to Dalai Lama to everything, he just cuts out their name and he just puts his name there.
He's literally copy pasta.
He's like, dude, and he, like, there's this hilarious video of this chick who just rips him to shreds. Like, she's like, oh, look at this quote. Oh, would you look at that? You know, here's the quote. It's like
that's so funny.
But he got, like, on that's Oprah. The kind
of, oh, Jesus.
Dude, he got on Oprah. He became like a millionaire, and like people just lapped up that shit, which just goes to show you, like, the world that we live in is like a fucking complete scammer who's got nothing original, who, you know, lied about going to a cave and meditating with the monks. Just like stole a bunch of fluffy, nice sounding quotes and became an author because he's enlightened, apparently. What an age of enlightenment we live in.
Wow. Oh man, it's so funny too, because like part of that is in this, like we have, again, we have so much meaning, and you talk about like the pursuit, I mean, we have so much information, but you talk about like the pursuit of happiness, like happiness is, like, I like to think of it as like incredibly shallow. It's this tiny little like shallow sliver on top of life. Yes. And in fact, the more that we chase that and that alone, the thinner it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Like the less it pays off as time goes on. So and that's how you get stuck in these cycles of just chasing the next thing. So like I can easily just be happy by sitting on my couch today and eating chips and watching movies. But the longer I do that, or the longer I chase those cheap things, the thinner all of it feels as time goes on. Whereas all the depth of life is in the meaning. It's in the fact that I ran somewhere and, you know, beat myself up to get somewhere that really changed things, that fundamentally allowed me to sit in a completely different place and look at the world differently, know things, and, you know, have some knowledge or quote unquote enlightenment about the world or my life and like why I'm even here doing anything. And that's the real depth, and it costs.
Exact cost. Thank you. You just, that was the word I was about to drop in there, is like everything has a cost. And it's like, you know, this ties into this notion that we have today of these democratic, you know, republics, or, you know, this government idea of utopianism. And I don't know if you saw that article that I published in the Citadel 21, is like libertarians are not utopians. Like, you know, libertarians, like sometimes, you know, because we sound like we have all these answers, and it's like, no, you know, if you don't do that, you know, that won't happen. It's like libertarianism, like, or free societies are not about some utopia. In fact, it's utopianism is actually it's a state construct. It's like it's a ruler, or a group that is, you know, believes that they know better, that they can somehow construct a set of policies or a framework that that will allow for the perfect society, or for the movement toward a perfect society, which is the height of arrogance and the height of ignorance to natural law. It's like, you know, what you mentioned before about going for a run and the difficulty associated with, you know, sacrificing your chips and sitting on the couch watching television, right? You know, that has an element of sacrifice. And here we are, like, with these utopian ideals, when I hear things like peace on earth, or you know, we can We can stop arguing, or we can remove conflict, or we can remove sacrifice, or we can remove hardship. All of those things, like, that's where meaning comes from. Like, meaning comes from the struggle. Meaning comes from sacrifice. Meaning comes from difficulty. Meaning
arguing
comes from
is how you overthink. Find truth. Yeah,
absolutely. Like this idea that, somehow some group of people have understood the ultimate truth, and through their framework, of government fiat decree, know how they can remove all of these so-called bad things like conflict or, disagreement or nuance or, discrimination is one of those ones. It's like, how do you remove discrimination? Like the definition of discrimination is choosing. So if you're not allowed to choose anymore, what do you have? It's like, you don't have freedom anymore. You have North Korea. Like there's no discrimination in North Korea. So like, for those of you who want to abolish discrimination, have you fuck off and live over there. There's a lot of peace there, but it's this, like, freedom and life is messy. It's unclean, but that is, therein lies the where, like, all diversity emerges from. That's where all spontaneity, where beauty, where, where differences, where discovery, where exploration all comes from. Like, but where we've kind of become crazed with sterilizing all of that, and thinking that if we can somehow remove all of that, that life is going to be better.
Yeah.
And this is why, like, I've actually moved away from this notion of, like, I think we all have our ebbs and flows when we see how stupid society is. It's like, man, this has got to be a conspiracy. Like, this has to be planned, because it just seems too, like, it seems too perfect. But then when I think about, when I watch people, like, I watched the Kanye episode with what's his face? Joe Rogan,
yeah.
And I was listening even to Kanye speak, and he's like, oh yeah, talking about shit like, we can create a utopia, where there's, peace with amongst them. I'm like, oh fuck, here we go, another dictator. Like, it's the arrogance and ignorance to believe that a utopia can somehow be, created, that is absent of conflict and is absent of disagreement and is absent of, some sort of struggle or sacrifice, flies right in the face of four realities, which is, we live in a world that is bound by scarce resources, scarce time, uncertainty of the future. None of us can tell the future. And the reality of the fact that we subjectively value everything differently.
Yeah. With those four, individuals.
We're all individuals. So with those four things, you will never get rid of conflict. You'll never get rid of struggle. You'll never get rid of disagreement. You'll never get rid of mess, unless you abolish all of that, and you remove subjective individualism. You remove, the other three you can't remove because they're physics, right? But you can delude yourself into
pretend, yeah.
You can pretend, exactly. You just delude yourself until you've depleted all of it, like the fucking USSR did, and like, every other stupid communist nation. So it's like, yeah, like, I think, we've touched on a few things there, but it's like, we no longer, like, philosophy has become like this thing that no one does anymore because, it's apparently irrelevant. But there's no more thinking about these deeper subjects. And
there's I can't remember which piece it was, which sucks. I read too much. One of the things that I'd read on the show was something along the lines of the quote, which is actually very similar to the tyranny quote you were talking about earlier, was that evil is born of believing you have nothing left to learn.
Mm.
Like, it's believing that, like, all censorship and like the silencing of discussion and all of these things, it's about believing that you are infallible, because then obviously you have the right, or you can silence this discussion because I'm infallible. Obviously, I'm already correct. I've already reached the end of the line here. Therefore, I should be able to silence discussion. And that is literally the source of tyranny, is believing that there's no discussion to have that could add to what you know or think about the world.
And what I'll add some color to that is that I believe that it very often, or probably in all cases, doesn't actually stem from an evil place. I actually think it stems from somebody genuinely, like, you know, I'm probably going to get some heat for this, but I actually think even the dictators like your Stalins and your Hitlers and all of that genuinely in the beginning thought what they were doing was right. And as they met resistance in their bid to, you know, to fight for their interpretation of the greater good or their interpretation of what a utopia is, of the right, they enacted these fucking tyrannies and atrocities. So it's like, you don't like, you don't start off a Nazi prison guard, right? You start off by having, you know, some sort of values and you sort of get like pushed a little bit and, you know, you do something that transgresses you a little bit, but you're like, oh, it's, you know, it's for the greater good. Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden, like increment by increment, you look back and you started off here somewhere. And you're like, what the fuck's going on? Like, you know, you've become a completely different person. And I think this, you know, evil is just this incremental movement away from reality in the pursuit of, you know, one person or one group's idea of what a utopia is. And that idea is actually, like, I'm going to be exploring that idea in the new Bitcoin Times that I'm my piece that I'm doing in there. But I'm convinced that, you know, all tyrannies started off as some, you know, utopian ideal.
Yeah.
It's this idea that, you know, perfection can be attained. And the thing is, perfection is found in irregularity. Perfection is found actually in imperfection.
Yeah.
I'm sounding like some fucking Zen Buddhist now, but it's like,
I totally agree. I get where you're going with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's this Zen Buddhist ridiculous notion. This ridiculous
perfection
notion
is found in imperfection.
I'm going to quote that. Our arrogant notion that we can remove imperfection in the pursuit of perfection is like the death blow to life. It's like we kill life, we kill ourselves in the pursuit of like perfection, which is the lowest standard. Yeah. So it's yeah, man. It's, there was something else I went on a ramble there, but anyway, it'll
come. Lost the tangent. Okay.
Yeah,
well, I actually want to go back to an earlier point before. I want to ask you about like Amber App and Bitcoin Times and all that stuff.
Yeah, sure.
We'll come back to that in just a second, though. We were talking about like the things that are scarce and how like those things are what like add meaning to our lives. And then we also brought up the point that, you know, technology is unbiased. A technology is not inherently good or evil. It just kind of is. And like kind of the process of evolution, like the process of being human is to adapt to our environment. And I think that's one of the real major things that has caused so many problems today is that our environment is changing. Technology is our environment, right? Our environment is changing faster than we know how to adapt. Like we're incredibly, particularly as a society, maybe as individuals, there's a degree that we can start to adjust. But as a society, we are painfully slow at adapting to some of these things, whereas our technology is moving at literal light speed now. And because of that, we're in this constant flailing to catch up with our environment. So with scarcity being reintroduced, knowing that like meaning comes from that, which like where we're getting abundance everywhere else, how do you think Bitcoin fits into this? Like the reintroduction of some extreme form of scarcity that we can attach value to in this new environment, what do you think that does to being human? You know, like
I actually have thought about this really, really deeply. And so this idea that technology is getting away from us and moving away from us, I think is a ramification or a side effect of the fiat disease. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally, and we look all throughout history, is technology and the advancement and development of technology was driven by need. you know, like I need, you know, to feed more people. So we came up with better ways to, you know, do things. So generally there was this sort of lockstep of need being the mother of, I mean, we even know the saying, necessity is the mother of all invention, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, is, and again, like I'm using logic to come to this conclusion as opposed to sources. So don't ask me for fucking sources, you know, whoever's listening out there.
But I want like, your chart.
show me the scientific evidence. So if we look at, you know, fiat and this sort of emergence of printing money, which money again represents the resource that we use to enable invention or to help enable or to spur on innovation. We've flooded our fucking system with all this cheap money, which was detached to actual need in society for things that we, you know, would have developed. Because, you know, in a functional society, if you go and invent something that nobody fucking needs, no one's going to buy it. So what's going to happen? You're going to go bust. You're going to go broke. But, I mean, and need is not like, again, to add some nuance there, it's not black and white. So in a society that's lost its fucking mind, need kind of pops up in different ways, but it's not real need. It's kind of like this superficial need that's driven by consumption or the pursuit of happiness or like the next fucking high, as opposed to actual need that's driven by meaning or production or productive capacity. So we had all this capital flood and basically accelerate the development of technologies and shit that we don't fucking need and that we're not ready to adopt. And now we're drowning in like this sea of information and the sea of shit of stuff that we actually didn't need in the first place. We don't need fucking Instagram. Like, and, you know, would Instagram have been invented? I don't know. You know, I actually think most likely no, you know, in a world that was actually more sound. But like we've sort of built this this house of cards of stuff on top of stuff on top of stuff on top of stuff with complete disregard to like the foundation of what's needed, you know, what do we actually have? What resources do we have? Like we're not measuring anything. We've lost all, you know, reliable price signals. We've lost all mechanisms for measuring like throughout the world, like what is actually required right now? Like we've got all these malinvestments, malused resources, overproduction here, underproduction there, subsidies for plastic, you know, fucking taxes for carbon and for energy products. It's like everything's like mishmash. So the I think at the end of that is this deranged evolution of technology that has become so heavily weighted to things in the bits and bytes side of the world, where information is, you know, this concept that's free. So we've kind of like almost like a bodybuilder, like, you know, that meme that Brazilian bodybuilder is like got those big biceps and nothing else. It's like that's what the world looks like today.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we've overdeveloped in one area. Nothing else is developed. We haven't developed, you know, depth of morality and ethics. We haven't, you know, we haven't developed in like educating ourselves. We've got these, you know, state indoctrination fucking institutions called schools, which teach us to go through, bash any individuality out of us for 12 years and send us out on the other side knowing how to regurgitate and look for fucking sources instead of think. So it's like all of these other areas were completely underdeveloped, but we've got all this, you know, tech that's been fueled by cheap money and cheap credit and, you know, narcissism and, you know, this pursuit of dopamine hits and serotonin hits that you get by getting a fucking like. So it's like it's all become deranged. So coming back to then the original question around Bitcoin, getting all animated here, I need to calm down.
Just keep rolling. Get some coffee.
Bitcoin. This is me on water. Coffee's dangerous. The reintroduction of Bitcoin, I think, will help, you know, bring us back to a world where we consume what we need. You know, we come back to producing something that actually provides a benefit or, and a benefit in the sense of better allocation of resources or the more efficient use of finite resources and the advantage to first the individual who built it for you know, whatever means they need and then the advantage of anyone who sees value in it, who's willing to trade their scarce money for the use of that object, tool, invention, innovation. So, and a lot of us in Bitcoin, we feel it today. You know, I mean, the very notion of hodling is, you know, that this it's deflationary in nature. We know that purchasing power is going to be maintained with Bitcoin. And now, arguably, one could say, oh, yeah, but that's because, you know, Bitcoin is appreciating and it's still emerging. But it doesn't matter. Like, in a world where productivity is increasing, where innovation is moving forward, the purchasing power of money will actually continue to increase.
It will always. It's
going to be incremental later. Obviously, it's not going to be like now. But at the end of the day, it makes you think fucking twice before you spend your money. So we buy and allocate resources more intelligently because of it, because we're paying for something or buying something that we need, as opposed to blindly chasing happiness, consumption, and the next high, which is, I think, a derangement of the fiat system. So, yeah, is that an answer? I don't know.
No, yeah, no, I totally like. Kind of the general idea is that. Like we've been in this constant state. We used to have a strong foundation to work off of, and then we lost sight of it because we lost, like going back to your point about like, you know, we used to invent out of necessity. Now all of our necessity, because we used to have a strong foundation to work off of, our necessity became just social need, like pleasing each other, like making sure that, you know, like we had people listening to our show and, you know, all this stuff, like it became more and more surface layer. Yes. Just very much like that, you know, pursuit of happiness, like that thin layer on top. We just had a veneer, and then we started stacking veneer on top of veneer on top of veneer, and then never took time to notice the fact that someone was wiping the foundation out of our entire structure. That the foundation was just being chipped away and chipped away by the money printers, and all of our price signals went chaotic, and our veneers became less and less, like they just went chaos. Like they don't mean anything anymore because they're not attached to what the ultimate goal was. And kind of the beauty of Bitcoin in that context is that it's a new foundation. It doesn't have a veneer on it yet. We're literally starting a new building next to it and being like, guys, you got to get out of that building before. I mean, look at that foundation. That shit is crumbling. You got to get out of
there anymore. Yeah, exactly. we've built this top heavy thing with nothing down here. And it's, you know, and it's like sort of swaying in the wind now. It's like, I mean, sometimes I play the thought experiment in my mind. I'm like, you know, imagine all the resources that have been wasted in, like, you know, large scale, whether it's large scale wars, whether it's like ridiculous fucking taxes and, you know, poor regulation and, you know, then the management of that fucking ridiculous regulatory you know, infrastructure that's been created, and then, you know, the like we've created perverted needs basically. So by going in and, for example, regulating the more efficient production of energy, let's say, like, imagine how much further we would be in terms of not only like efficiency, but the extraction of, let's just even say, fossil fuels. You know, again, the SJWs out there are going to crucify me, but we would be extracting and using fossil fuels so much more intelligently now had we not gone and taxed the fuck out of the stuff, and, you know, and moved our best minds away from focusing on how to get more out of the finite resource that we have and push them into banking and fucking software. That's literally where all the best minds in the world ran off to. Because
think about the people who are legal. Think about, like, I mean, you could probably point to almost any industry today, like advertising. I think it was, was it Gigi's piece? Crap. I can't remember which thing I read this in. Talking about how advertising is probably orders up because we're in a society that just does nothing but push consumption. Advertising is probably 10x as big as it would be.
100%. 100%.
Banking, medical is completely like talking about that thin veneer. Like why do we have 8 billion medicines? You don't need 8 billion. You need health.
you need food.
Back to the foundation. Like, yep. So anyway, sorry, interrupt.
No. You literally nailed it. It's like we have perverted the basis of need. And in this kind of like society that's just losing control. That's you know, tying back to what you said in the beginning, like directionless period that we're in. You know, we confuse like foundational need with, you know, this surface level need, and then we keep layering on. Like, we don't need like another fucking. I mean, maybe we need another Twitter that doesn't just censor people, but let's just like, we don't need another fucking TikTok. Like, we don't need another stupid, social media thing that we can fucking look at each other and jack off on. Like, that is not, there's so many other problems in society today. And you've got some of the brightest people out there, like engineers who could be solving problems that help the world. They're building useless fucking apps that are, you know, slightly different than someone else's, because, you know, investors understand that the world is fucking deranged and that what matters today is clicks and likes and shares as opposed to real problems. And I honestly think that is, you know, when people talk about Bitcoin fixes this, and, you know, I know old mate Rusty Russell or whatever, he kind of bags out like, oh, you know, the stuff that Bitcoin has said, but it's bullshit. Like, Bitcoin actually does fix so much. And you really have to understand these base incentive-driven mechanisms of society. And when you see how much society's become perverted because those incentives have fucking completely been skewed, you know, we no longer, and I honestly think this is the best way to do it, is we no longer innovate for need or for foundational need. We just innovate because we're fucking innovating, because we're pursuing consumption and happiness and all the wrong things.
It's for fiat need. It's for, yes, and I don't mean that, yes, in the sense that, yes, like, oh, it's just for whatever reason. It's for whatever serves the political apparatus that's moving, yes, the funds.
Yes.
You fiat chase need is
the perfect word.
You chase where it's coming from. Like we're doing it to get the grant. We're doing it to fulfill the subsidy. We're doing it to get around the regulation. We're doing it to sue somebody because look at this law. Holy crap. I'm going to be a lawyer because this whole stack of nonsense means that we're going to have a whole industry around just suing each other for the corners of your phone. Like, it just,
exactly,
the entire environment, rather than coming from the needs based in reality and scarcity and meaning of life, it's need of authority. It's like, yes, what did they say are the rules? What did they say the reality is? And now let's all respond and reorganize based on how to capitalize on that, because they're the ones that are trickling down the value or just moving $4, $5, $6 trillion a year just being pushed around by these guys. That becomes a new reality. And it, absolutely, works until we just run out of shit.
Yes, exactly. So I think you just, like, fiat need just literally nails it, because, and this is again the problem with that top down authority and, you know, all the things you just mentioned there, you know, regulation and this and that. And I think, again, for anyone who's grasping at trying to find an example, 2020 is a perfect example. We don't need fucking masks, but all of a sudden, you know, there's, you know, a need, an artificial need has been created for all these idiots to go now produce I shouldn't call them idiots, like entrepreneurs and businesses to produce masks.
For so whoever did it first is the smartest in the room, you know, technically.
Correct. So, but it's the meeting, or it's the solution to a fiat need. It's the solution to an artificial need that has been created because of a stupid decree. Same thing with the testing. Same thing with what they're going to say with this fucking whatever the vaccine's going to be. We need a vaccine. We don't need a vaccine. It's just, you said so. And now all of a sudden, whoever, you know, develops this vaccine is going to get filthy fucking rich. Like, I mean, without going too much in the corona talk, but like that vaccine thing is going to be like, you know, people are going to be forced to take a vaccine that they don't need. And the government's going to say it's free, because the government's going to pay for it, but we pay the government in terms of taxes. So we're going to be paying for our own vaccine for something that we don't need. It's like, if there was ever a perversion. And
Pfizer is going to make hundreds of billions, yes, of dollars.
Because we are literally ourselves paying for something that we don't need. And it's like, if there was ever an argument for the perversion of resource allocation, thanks to top-down, you know, authoritarian or top-down authority. Let's just call it that. Let's not even give it the term authoritarian. This is it. Like, we're making shit we just don't fucking need. Never would have needed in the history of humanity. And let's just waste all the resources on that.
Yeah. And so funny, like going back to your point of the article that you wrote, the libertarianism is not utopianism, which, by the way, the picture for that is this. I had never seen it before. And I was dying. I was absolutely dying. But I think we shared it around in the Audionauts crew, and then it went into my Signal crew with like my family or whatever. Like that one made around, that made its rounds a couple of times. In that idea is that it's not about creating a perfect world. It's about creating the right incentives and the right pricing that just prevents that sort of dog shit.
And there's going to be conflict. There's going to be people who disagree, but you know that they'll solve it based on need, not because someone said so.
But there will be an underlying truth to argue about. There will be an underlying actual productivity or real pricing and real value of how people value things based in an actual scarce money, like a totem that actually measures like as if inches actually measure distance. If it stopped measuring distance, it wouldn't make sense to build things based on inches if that's not what it was measuring anymore. And money is no longer measuring value and scarcity. It's measuring decree.
Yes.
It's measuring a political atmosphere, which is not based in reality. It's just opinion. Yeah.
It's just opinion. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've lost sight of it. Like, everything's upside down and backwards, and we need more naked ladies with guns and pot smoking horses.
Yes, with mushrooms all over the place. Dude, I copped a bit of heat from that one. It was funny. I was like, I didn't give a shit, man. I'm admiring this. Like, that's the world we need.
So but funny.
It's so true, man. It's like I think the point there about money is like, you know, if we can all agree that money's it's become the resource, but like fundamentally it's supposed to represent the resource of the product of our labor. And, you know, the product of our labor is, again, you know, time, energy mixed with finite resources. So like if that sort of ties back really tightly to money, we actually have a basis in reality from which to make appropriate decisions and from which to solve problems. Because fallacy. I remember what I was going to talk about before. The Rousseauian fallacy is this idea that, you know, humans are not flawed. Like, humans are perfect, which is such a load of shit. It's, you know, humans are fundamentally not perfect, but this Rousseauian, idea, like he was a philosopher, I think a French philosopher in sort of the 17th, 18th century. And, you know, he sort of, or could have been later, pushed this idea that humans are perfect. And if it was all we have to do to ensure perfection is build like the perfect institute that is, that looks like man. And I'm completely butchering the notion here, but the idea is that, like the opposite to the idea of recognizing that human beings are flawed and that we're all different and that we're not all going to get along and that there's always going to be conflict, but building structures or hierarchies of competence, that allow us in our differences, in our complete fallibility, in our disagreement to actually cooperate and work together. And sort of the Rousseau was sort of like the forefather for almost utopian communist thought, is that, you know, human beings are all perfect and, you know, if only things were just like this, then everyone would be perfect and happy, which doesn't exist.
Yeah. It begs the question, is this like, why do you know that if it was like this, it would be right? Like that is your like this. What about the person sitting next to you? They have a like this that is different than yours. Why yours? Like,
and somehow they miss that. they like literally skim over the fact that the person sitting next to them might have a completely different set of values and beliefs. And, you know, how do we reconcile what's right there and what's wrong? I don't know. So now that I've mentioned that, I lost my other point. This old age is getting to me, guy. Jesus Christ.
All right. So right here, we totally lose our train of thought completely. And then talk about for about 45 seconds or a minute about all the great things we were probably going to talk about, but couldn't remember before we finally kind of get back on track. So this is probably a great place to take a break and talk about our awesome new sponsor for the show. So when I talk to you guys about holding your own keys, the gold standard for serious cold storage is a solid, simple, secure hardware wallet. I've recently been digging into the BitBox O2, and this thing is awesome. It is Swiss-made with privacy, quality, reliability, and independence as a top focus. With the BitBox app ready to go, it's super simple, has a really quick micro SD seed backup, and they give you the card already, which is actually great because I'm kind of sick of writing down my seed words everywhere, and to have something physical that I can kind of keep track of, I really like that, and I don't know of another wallet that does that. The design is really minimal, it's Bitcoin only, and legit, the BitBox will make you a Bitcoiner in under 10 minutes. You don't own your Bitcoin until you hold your keys. BitBox is a low-cost, secure, high-quality solution to that problem. So check them out at guyswan.com/BitBox. So if you're getting your first hardware wallet, your second hardware wallet, or one for a family member who needs to take that first step and hold their own keys, this is a great solution to that problem. Again, that is guyswan.com/BitBox. All right, let's jump back into our chat with Alex Svetsky.
Have you been keeping up with Lightning lately?
No, dude. I've been completely out of touch with the more techie side of things. What's going on?
Missing out. Oh. So the Sphinx app stuff is basically coming into its own right now, which is a encrypted chat app that just is routing over Lightning. And I've been so jacked about that. Like, so it's basically Telegram. One of the really clever tricks they're doing with it is Telegram attached to Lightning. You know, everything's just built on Lightning essentially. At first, like, I'm just thinking like I always wanted an encrypted chat app anyway, that I could just, you know, easily pay, you know, send to and from Bitcoin kind of thing, attach it to my node. And then I know beyond question, it's attached to my public key. So unless somebody has access to my money, obviously nobody can read my messages, like, because that's how it's built. Which is one of the really cool things that Paul, the main guy over there building it with their team, I've spoken to him a couple of times. Every time I talk to the guy, I just walk away and I'm so bullish. Like, I'm just like so jacked. I don't even know what to do with myself. And he's talking about how, like, it's one of the most easy. He's been working with internet protocols and code and stuff since literally like the early 90s and stuff, like before the internet was really the internet. And he said he's never been so confident in something is going to be the standard. He's just like, no, everything just makes sense. It's like, you know, when you figure out a protocol to securely send and receive money, doing anything else with it is just dirt simple.
Yeah, well,
you just put it into the same little packet and you already know how secure it is. You already know how reliable it is. So that's got me totally jacked. And he's put a podcast player, put a podcast app in it so that, in our tribe, in the Bitcoin Audionauts, which we've got like 10 or 15 people in there now, and we're slowly moving over to Sphinx, people can play the show in the app, and then they pay like a tenth of a penny every minute to listen to the show.
I assume it's priced in sats?
It's in sats, yeah. It's like 100 sats. Yeah, okay. Like if you have like a slider, you can choose like how much you want to do, but I shoot mine all the way up to just 100. Because Adam Curry, the guy who created podcasts, is on this now. He just announced it on his show. He's apparently been a big Bitcoiner for a long time, has been running a Lightning for a while, and has been talking to Paul for some time in the background. He just announced on his show, like, I guess at the beginning of this week, if I'm not mistaken, that he's doing a tribe on Sphinx. And there's like 100 people in there donating, like everybody's just buying a node from Sphinx or whatever and donating sats like crazy. And it's awesome. It's awesome. There's a huge crew. You can tip and you listen to the podcast. I listened to his whole podcast and I'd send him like a, I don't know, like $1.10 or something, I think, for the episode. but I was streaming money to him the whole time I'm listening to it. So if I stop 20 minutes in and I don't want to listen to the rest of it, well, then I don't pay anymore.
And you stop, yeah, dude. This is an example of like whenever I hear people, you know, say something as dumb as, you know, it's all over for Bitcoin and stuff like that. I mean, I did that talk obviously last year, which is, you know, blockchain is dead. The future is on Lightning.
Yeah,
the future's
still
here.
Still one of my favorite. I love that shit. So unapologetic.
thank you. it's happening, man. It's happening. And it just gives me so much pleasure because that was now 2 years ago. And it's like, I mean, I don't know. It like this.
It's moving at a mile like, a minute. Like it is so fast. It's unbelievable. And it's funny, like it took forever to really bootstrap the foundation of this thing to like really get the network underway. But the foundation is strong enough now and like the main pieces are worked out. The next couple of stages of this are going to be so fast. I mean, literally, it's like every week or two, like something big drops. The recent developments in like Breeze Wallet and Phoenix. Phoenix, you can now send money to people while they're not online. Breeze, now it will open channels automatically if you receive a payment that you don't have the capacity for. It just charges you a 0.1% fee to open a new channel in the background, and then it automatically opens the channel, broadcasts it, and then updates the commitment to push the transaction to you. So it works as fast as any other Lightning channel, and you don't even know.
No, oh, yeah, okay.
Like, it's just immediate. Yeah. Like, and this is the beginning. This is the beginning, yeah, you know? Yeah. Like, we're just getting rolling.
I love what you said there about spending some time building the foundation. Cause again, like everything that you see in the Bitcoin space is almost analogous to that idea of, you know, 9 hours of sharpening the axe and 1 hour of chopping. You know, it's kind of like, how did you chop the tree in 1 hour? Like that's a lot of work. It's because, you know, we've done this, we've built this foundation and that time has been spent to like, to build something you can build on where, and again, you look at the Ethereums and every other fucking shitcoin out there is they've done it the other way around. Like, and this is why, like, I'm adamant that crypto is fiat, you know, anything other than Bitcoin is just fucking new age, modern digital fiat, just run by nerds and dweebs who didn't learn the lesson, you know, co-opted some, you know, nice words in Bitcoin. Like, you know, let's throw around the word decentralized, let's throw around the word blockchain. And assume that we're doing the same thing, but taking like, and this is again, comes back to the principles, right? Is they haven't learned any principles. Like Bitcoin's principles are, you know, patience, are, you know, this low time preference, like build a foundation, like immutability, like they're the principles. It's like, well, we're going to beat Bitcoin by throwing away those principles, taking like bringing our principles from the fiat world and building a competitor. It's like, what? and they're gonna wonder why like their thing's collapsing whilst Bitcoin tech is fucking mooning.
Yeah.
And they have the audacity to sit there and say like, oh yeah, nothing's happening on Bitcoin.
Well, they have that mindset of chasing the next hype just as fast as they can go. So they're building something as quickly as they can and releasing it so they get that short-term bump. And then it falls and people realize that it either A, the foundation is breaking, or like now they've got to do maintenance. They've got all this like technical debt to fix everything else. I mean, they're having to re-foundation all of Ethereum. Bitcoin doesn't have to touch that.
So dumb.
So while Bitcoin spends 3 years, 4 years laying out an incredibly strong foundation for the next protocol, they think they've already won because they had their hype cycle and now it's on the downturn and now they're having to fix all the problems they got. Whereas the foundation is now finally robust. And at the end of the race, now we're moving at light speed and they're fixing problems.
100%. Like if there was ever a microcosm of the clusterfuck that is the fiat system with completely maligned investments, misallocated funds, you know, a porous foundation and like, you know, completely deranged outcomes is like, you know, Ethereum is a miniature version of what's happening in the world today. Like all the wrong things at all the wrong times in all the wrong order. And it's spaghetti.
We're going to be doing we're going to be doing an episode of Shitcoin Insider on it very soon. And I'm really excited.
Coin Insider. What the hell is that?
You haven't heard about it yet?
How have I not heard about this?
We're only two episodes deep. We're only two episodes deep. It's really early. It's me and my co-host who is not to be named. But we dig heavily. Now we're actually, this will be the first show where we have a guest on. It's literally, it's Bitcoin maximalists explaining and digging into what's going on in shitcoins.
Who are the guests? Are the guests actual shitcoiners or?
No. Well, we may have actual shitcoiners on at some point, but it's people who know very much about the things that we're talking about or who have been involved in the project in the past, at least the people that we have lined up right now. Our first episode with just me and the co-host was all about, what was our first episode about? Oh my God. It's been like 3 days. Dude, I keep thinking about Filecoin because we wanted to do an episode about it. Dude, my brain is all over the place right now. The second episode, we just finished one on BCH and BSV.
Yeah.
God, it was great. And it was like perfect timing too, because they just had the fork, or they're just
another one.
A fork. You know, BCH has a fork in like 2 days. And they're trying to implement a tax in the protocol.
That one's
happening. Yeah. And then BSV just found out that their multi-sig used the wrong script. They did just kind of a band-aid it because they ripped P2SH just out of the protocol.
Mm-hmm.
They put it back together with just a basic script, which is basically like a P2WPKH, I think. Whatever the hell it is. The one basically where you have to do public keys. When they did it, the script that they use, because the stack is like reversed in Bitcoin, it's like kind of counterintuitive. They used, greater than or equal instead of less than or equal. And in doing so, they implemented this thing. And apparently did not test. They did not test the fail scenario, the succeed scenario, or the I have too many signatures scenario. All they did was just test the perfect threshold. It's like, oh, if I have a 2 of 3, does 2 keys unlock it? Yes, it does. Okay, we're good. But since it's backwards, it's 2 keys or less will unlock it. So, and what is less than 2? 0. You can just put a bunch of zeros in the signature spot and you can steal anybody's coins on all the money. Yeah, on BSV.
Do you know what I'm picturing now? You know that meme with the I don't know if it's even got a name, that like that drawing of that face where like people make fun of the brain, like, or is like, I don't know, either got like a frog in the brain or something, or like a broken bicycle, like the complete retard, like, man. I don't think there is anything as dumb as BSV. Like, I would argue that it's dumber than Dentacoin, dumber than the whole lot, man. It's like the complete derangement. I think
DeFi,
like, I saw
pretty bad. DeFi's pretty bad.
Look, it is, but it's like
that was our first episode, by the way. I remember now. I couldn't remember. I had to talk about BSV for a little bit, but
I'm sure there's some like naive, but probably intelligent engineers in or around the DeFi space who had just sort of been indoctrinated in either, you know, they've probably got like some, you know, I've got a finance and, you know, a computer science degree or something like that, right? Like coming out of it. So I'm sure there's some smart kids, but that had just been, you know, indoctrinated into stupidity and believe that they're doing something. But I just think like you have to be a complete fucking nitwit to have anything to do with BSV. Like I'm sorry, there is no like, there's zero defense there. Like
this is why I love having you on the show. This is why I love talking to you, because I always really try to be like, I try to like not go there. I try to be like nice. And then, but this is what's going through my head every time I try to explain anything. Dude, Alex like Fesky is my inner voice.
Channel your inner Svetsky. It's like, dude, it's they're beyond deranged. Like Roger, I don't know. He put that tweet up the other day. Is like, oh, you know, Bitcoin's broken because you know his shit little meme with like the Bitcoin and the Lightning Network thing.
He does. Like,
but I almost feel sorry for Roger because like, and I saw Giacomo kind of reply to one of his tweets recently. He's like, come on, man, give it up. Like, you know, you've lost. It's over. We're going to have a bigger fight to, you know, fight in the coming decades. So, you know, why don't you just come and join us? And like, that was actually a really good sort of reply to him, because as much as Roger's a moron, like, I think, you know, in some ways, his heart's in the right place. Like the thing is, he's just stupid. But his heart, I think, was in the right place. Like in terms of his, you know, some of his libertarian views, and you know, like this and that. So,
what I think his end goal was, like, is basically the same as ours. You know,
correct. He's just, you know, somehow, like, again, whether through greed or through stupidity or through short-sightedness or through whatever, you know. He's become so attached to something that is so clearly dead in the water, like absolutely dead on arrival and dead in the water. So I don't know, like, but for BSV, for example, so like I have zero remorse, absolutely no remorse. Like that is like, you have to be a fucking moron. But like, you know, BCH, like I actually think that over the next probably, I mean, after this bull run sort of peaks and, you know, starts to trough again, I think, you know, if Roger still hasn't come back to Bitcoin, he will have probably committed suicide. Like, I just don't think there's anything there. Like,
I think he'll probably just leave altogether.
All that.
We'll just
that.
But, hear about him.
The guy built a brand in it. So I don't know. Like, I mean, it's a tough one, right? Like,
yeah, true.
You know, because identity, like, there's another good Tony Robbins saying, which is there's no force stronger in the human psyche than the need to stay consistent with your identity. Mm-hmm. And that's so important. And that's why, like, when I used to do things like, you know, I was studying psychology for a while and all this sort of stuff. And I hate, like, again, universities teach you fiat fucking psychology where they, you know, teach you that there's a patient and that there's something wrong with someone and that you somehow have to fix them. And, you know, that the way to fix them is to, you know, involve them with therapies for fucking 10, 15 years and drugs and all this crap. Like, I don't subscribe to any of that. Like, again, I'm sort of squarely in the Adlerian school of like personal responsibility, and that there's no such thing as trauma. There's, you know, and there's no victim situation. Like you solve it yourself. But and Tony Robbins comes across, you know, much in that sort of light as well. But it's you know, when you look at when you want to help someone quit smoking, for example, like you help them re-identify who they are. It's, you know, and when they come to the point where I am not a smoker, they actually can finally move beyond, not someone who said, oh, I used to smoke, but I don't smoke anymore. They haven't actually moved beyond and changed that identity. So it'll be really interesting to see with Roger, whether like he's literally identified as a Bitcoin casher now, like that's part of his psyche. It's part of his thing. Like it'll be really interesting to see whether he'll actually, and it takes so much courage to like kill that part of you. And that
especially, you know, is heavily invested in it as he is.
Jesus Christ. So that's why I think like he's either going to end up in a mental institution or he's going to like have to disappear. Like, I don't know. or he's going to have to come back to it. I don't know. It's going to be crazy. And this is,
I'd welcome him back. I mean, he's kind of an ass, you know, but I mean, a bunch of us are, I'd like to have a conversation with him if he finally basically was like, okay, you know, it was a wrong way to do things, but I still think we can reach this future. I'd be very interested.
Yeah. Man, we're going to need all the hands we can get. Like, I think, whether it was before you pressed record or in the beginning of this, we're talking about how this decade is going to be messy. Like, I'm literally preparing myself, like, mentally and physically for a tough decade. It's unfortunate because I kind of wanted to enjoy my 30s, but I'm increasingly getting the sense that my 30s are going to be a really tough decade. I think there's going to be stupid laws, stupid restrictions, more money printing, negative interest rates, you know, complete misallocation of like all sorts of weird and deranged and stupid things going on, which are going to tear apart society. And like, there's going to be more riots, more killings, more shit like that. And I hate to sound like a fucking doomsdayer, but, you know, I mean, as society becomes more deranged, there's always, you know, we've got this sort of growing pocket or this growing, you know, Noah's Ark or whatever that, you know, we kind of keep strengthening. But I think, you know, the only way to kind of emerge from this dumpster fire that is going to only get worse is for all of our, you know, for the Bitcoiners to actually have a strong enough financial influence or monetary influence when the time comes to actually rebuild. And like, arguably, I don't know, I honestly think we're living in the most exciting time in history. It's because in all prior catastrophes and collapses and revolutions and all that sort of stuff, wealth has actually been destroyed along the way. Like, you know, I mean, unless you're able to hold onto your gold or something like that, but fundamentally, like, property, businesses, like all those other ways of measuring wealth get absolutely decimated along the way. And I think a lot of that's going to happen this decade. But, you know, those of us with, you know, who are, you know, the rebels and the revolutionaries and all that sort of stuff, you know, who are coming to Bitcoin or already in Bitcoin, the trump card we seem to have is that we are probably going to be the richest motherfuckers in the world when the time comes to rebuild stuff.
We're rebuilding now. Like the people in Bitcoin are literally building foundations for exactly the things to solve everything that's collapsing.
Correct. But I think, you know, that I'm even going a little bit more broader. I think, you know, what other things are going to end up broken.
Okay.
Like, yeah. So like we're actually going to need to, and this is where I, like, if I got asked recently, it's like, oh, you know, if Amber's really successful, what are you going to do long term? I was like, well, look, you know, if I grow Amber, build it up, you know, and it gets to a certain point, like I'm not the CEO to run a square level company, you know, or even a company the tenth the size of that, you know, maybe 100th. You know, once I get big enough where, you know, I'm noticed by, you know, governments and, you know, like I get mired in regulatory horseshit, I'll probably sell the company to someone bigger. And then I'll take all that money, put it into Bitcoin and kind of probably go into like writing and, you know, philosophy and all of that. And then with the idea to kind of reemerge down the track to build private cities, because I honestly think that the world is going to change in such a way over the next 10 years that at the other end, it's going to be the building of advanced private cities where all the, where like the vanguard or the last that's left of, you know, the men of the mind and the women of the mind are going to happen. Like it's literally it's an Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged fucking Galt's Gulch that we, like Bitcoin is Galt's Gulch. And as everything starts to collapse around, you know, those of us who have protected our wealth and our sanity in Galt's Gulch and in good, you know, in good information and first principles knowledge, we're going to have to come back after the lights of New York go out to rebuild the shit.
Have you read, I guess, and or listened to Bitcoin and the Rhythms of History? Brandon Quittam's recent piece?
No, not yet. It's but I am going to listen to it. It's on my to listen to.
You got to. It's a good one. It's all about the fourth turning and this decade and like the foundation of like that way of thinking. God, it's so good. Really, I haven't been able to stop thinking about it since.
I'll have to read, because I did read The Fourth Turning, or I listened to The Fourth Turning on audiobook. I didn't like it that much. I felt like the idea of the generational seasons was really good. I think that's powerful. I think I just felt, and then sort of the archetypes of each one, I think that was also relatively powerful. But where I had a beef with their book was their conclusions at the end of this idea that the way for us to get through this fourth turning is to all come together and, you know, have better, government institutions. I was like, oh my God.
That's funny. I haven't actually read the book. I've had it on my list for a while, but basically what Quidem does is he takes the foundation of the generational thinking
and applies
it to Bitcoin.
The lens of Bitcoin. Yeah. I think that is the absolute appropriate application of those rhythms and those archetypes, because that is fundamentally true. Like a lot of people kind of put Fourth Turning into like the category of like Sovereign Individual, of like a 90s book that, you know, really predicts things well. Mm-hmm. And in some senses it does, but like what the guys did with Sovereign Individual and the quality of like how they reimagined what the world would look like is next level. Whereas like the Fourth Turning, it's they kind of reimagine. It's much clearer, but it's also poignant, and it actually took courage to rethink about what the world might look like, you know, as technology kind of empowers the individual and it changes the incentives for, you know, violence, etc. So that was such a powerful lens to look through the world with, and actually make some assumptions on how technology and how behavior and how the very fabric of the nation state might evolve. Whereas the Fourth Turning kind of says, oh yeah, well, this is all going to happen. This kind of chaos is going to happen. And for us to better manage it, we need a stronger, government institutions and, you know, coming togetherness of, you know, it all. It's like, what the fuck? Like they didn't take the time to actually rethink what society might look like out the back of a Fourth Turning. They just kind of think that, you know, we should almost digress and, you know, it was a very collectivist attitude, and that's like really pissed me off about the book. I was like, fucking hell, they started off with such a good idea and then they took a shit all over it by the end of it, which was
Well, they didn't rethink their premise. They took it from the lens of the nation state and everything as it is now,
rather than
thinking, oh, that could even be up for grabs here. Like where they talk about like the American Revolution. Like if you did the same thing prior to that, the answer to the turning of the American Revolution would be like, we need a stronger monarchy and we need to come together. And you know, like they're not actually going to the foundation and rethinking. It's like, okay, if the foundation shifts, what does the new society built on top
Correct.
Of it look like? And that is exactly what the Sovereign Individual did.
Exactly right.
I mean, they took like three steps all the way back and they said, okay, what is violence? What are the incentives of violence? How does society organize around those things? Let's look at the lens of history through this, or look at history through this lens, see if it informs shifts that have happened for thousands of years. Oh, wow, it does. What does that mean? What does that mean when you introduce cryptography? What does that mean when you introduce this entire cyberspace, this digital environment, and assume nation states are just a product? Like, can they sustain themselves? Like these are just narratives. Do these narratives change? What does it look like when you change the utter foundation?
So, and that therein lies the mark of a deep thinker, is to think beyond the current paradigm. And that's when, like, I mean, I remember, I haven't studied Austrian economics and libertarianism. So I'm not like, I didn't come to Bitcoin through that lens, like, you know, someone like Stefan Levera may have, right? So like I came in touch with it when I was a gold bug and silver bug in 2011, 2012. And, you know, I understood this, you know, notion of money printing and what is sound money and like really basic Austrian econ, like, but I didn't really like go into it, but I guess my life experience sort of like, you know, made me, I guess primed me to better understand that stuff, because I've always been, you know, personally responsible. I've always been an entrepreneur. I've always made things for myself. I've never accepted from someone else. You know, I don't like this idea of socializing my losses, you know, and all that sort of shit. Right. So I was primed for it, but you know, really Bitcoin was my, my real gateway drug into, you know, Austrian econ and all of that stuff. Now, prior to me getting into Bitcoin, like I read that book, Sapiens, and you would know from my earlier work, like I used to hold Yuval Harari in high regard, but these days I think he's a fucking moron because he's an example of, maybe I shouldn't say moron, but he's an anthropologist who, and historian, blah, 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 who has, you know, correctly analyzed history and drawn some, you know, powerful conclusions. Like, you know, his central idea in Sapiens was this idea of shared fictions and, you know, narratives that have helped us create hierarchies through which we can cooperate and collaborate and actually do shit. Yes, that is the reason why human beings move forward. But the thing is, and particularly in his subsequent books, like I ended up reading his 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, and what the fuck, man, it was the biggest garbage. It was absolutely atrocious.
I haven't read it.
Oh, dude, it's absolutely atrocious because all he does is the same thing as these guys in Fourth Turning do, which is he draws some insights, but then he applies the lessons through the lens of today, of a society that is nation state based, that is you know, collectivist based, that is and you know, his thing about like all of his things came back to basically light forms of communism is, you know, how do we combat, you know, the potential of you know, a technocratic elite emerging and, you know, being a panopticon on everything we do. Oh well, we need to enable better governments to, you know, better oversee. It's like, oh my god. It's like, and for me, that is the mark of a lazy thinker, is you can't think beyond the current paradigm. Ray Dalio is another person who I used to hold in high esteem, but now I think is an absolute moron, is that he looks at the world through, you know, he talks about paradigm shifts, but then he defines the future in the current paradigm.
Yeah,
it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And it's really prevalent with a lot of these quote unquote, you know, thinkers of today, which aren't thinkers. Like when I compare their work to people like, you know, Rothbard or Hans Hermann Hoppe or the, you know, Rees Mogg and Davidson from Sovereign Individual or Ayn Rand, like, man, they're giants compared to these guys. These guys are just fucking regurgitating some crap that they've read. You know, they've learned some academia somewhere along the line. They've read some pseudoscience or they've read some, you know, historical anecdotes, and they're just applying the today's lens and their experience from today, and they're projecting it forward. There's no creativity. There's no courage. There's no foresight. There's nothing there that inspires somebody to think differently. And
now, I would push back on that a little bit, that there is actual interesting creativity within their Overton window.
Okay, all right.
At projecting that forward, they just don't know how to step outside of it. They don't know how to break that Overton window and like actually look around for a second as to like, okay, what if the world just doesn't work the way I'm assuming it works right now? You know, like, and that's kind of the beauty of you're talking about with Rees Mogg, or Mogg.
Mogg, double G.
Yeah, and like these guys and like Ayn Rand's, like Ayn Rand's book is such a great example of this, of like looking just at the individual person. Mm-hmm. What is changing at this tiniest level that we can go back to? And then how does that change their interactions with the person right next to them? And then how does that change the interactions with a group of 10? And then 100, and then what does the new, like, does a nation state still work under those conditions, or all are the foundations that actually led us to the nation state to begin with, or led us to this monarchy, or led us to this feudalism, or whatever it is, have those things actually changed at the individual level, and are we going to be looking at something entirely different? It's just dropping the Overton window completely and starting back at the beginning.
Well, that. You just said beginning, which is the ideal word, is like, that's the sign of a person who approaches things from first principles,
yeah,
versus someone who approaches something from, you know, historical anecdotes or narratives. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the differentiation in thinking. So yeah, whilst I would concede that they're probably creative within their Overton window, within the paradigm that they're actually in, they're lacking the depth to reimagine that because they haven't maybe they haven't fully grasped the first principles, or they haven't really thought deeply enough to reimagine what it could look like, as opposed to projecting, you know, forward based on, again, you know, using that Overton window.
They got to the edge of their frame and they stopped asking questions.
That's it. And within that frame, so they got there, it's like almost like a beam of light that hit the edge, and then they're like, oh, well, then things are going to change because the light hit this right edge and it's going to go that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious, just because, and particularly before we kind of run out of time here, how's Amber app going? What's things I haven't kept up? I mean, I don't live in the down under. So.
Of course. Well, the biggest changes is that Europe turned out into one big waste of fucking time, energy, and, you know, just bureaucratic nonsense. You know, when Wirecard collapsed here, because they were supposed to obviously launch in, they were servicing a lot of the crypto companies in Europe, and then they somehow, whoops, we lost $2 billion, we don't know where it is, and they collapsed. You know, that sent some, didn't you know about that?
I did not know yeah,
so they had an accounting error of $2.1 billion, so the whole bank collapsed.
Oh shucks.
Yeah, but
gosh,
hey, Bitcoin's
dang,
risky.
Dang darn it.
Bitcoin's risky, guy, you better be careful. Legacy banking, we know what we're doing.
Like Office Space, like some disgruntled dude is like, let's do a rounding, let's round everything up into our account,
let's just add a couple of zeros. It's wild. It's like, how, it's like, oh whoops, we lost that, we didn't, that was not on our balance sheet in the first place, so that their shares dropped like 97% and they filed for bankruptcy. So it's like, oh see you later. So anyway, they were sort of servicing all the, they were providing the bank accounts for crypto companies here in Europe. So when that sort of fell apart, it kind of like turned things upside down. So anyway, we kind of like diverted our focus and went to building some new features. So we've rolled out like a premium version of Amber called Amber Black. And it gives you some really cool features. So it's like, we've got like fucking love this feature, and I haven't talked about it much because it's not live, it's in beta, but we call them intelligent automations. So we've built the ultimate button, so it's kind of like DCA on steroids. Okay. We've got the buy the dip and the sell the pump button, so like buy the dip obviously being more important, so you can set a percentage drop and then in a time period. So it's an if this, then that statement. So if Bitcoin drops this percent in this period of time, buy me this much Bitcoin. And dude, I've been using it now for the last couple of weeks. And every time there's like a little pullback in Bitcoin, like I wake up and like, you bought Bitcoin, you bought the dip, like 2% drop through. It's the fucking greatest thing ever.
Dude, that's awesome.
It's such a cool thing. So
that's genius. It's like a simple, it's an automated like percent limit order.
Yeah. Literally.
Sitting and waiting for the opportunity. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's golden. I love that.
So that's one little update. And then the second update is that I haven't announced this anywhere yet, so I'll make a slight mention of it. But it looks like I'll be coming to your shores much, much, much sooner than I thought.
Boom.
Boom, motherfuckers. That's right.
The dip button, son.
Dude, it's going to be good news. Sick. Yeah. So that's the two big things. So Amber Black, premium version of Amber, smart features, smart automation. Like it's got also like the other automation that we introduced is like it auto withdraws to your cold storage so basically you can just set up Amber, you set up your DCA, you set up your buy the dip rules, and you fucking go to Timbuktu, and this thing will just be buying Bitcoin for you on the dip, on the regular, and it'll be sending it to your cold storage. You won't have to lift a finger. It's the ultimate incentive stacking.
That's the way to buy Bitcoin. That's why I do Swan Bitcoin all the time. It's just because like I don't think about it. I just get my email that says I did my DCA, and then like when you guys drop, it'll be like, and by the way, you also bought the dip.
It's the bomb. It's gonna be the bomb. So yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to rolling out. So fingers crossed. I mean, if anyone does hear this and is interested in the US, hit me up on Twitter. I'm going to start putting together a little beta list for the US. There'll be some juicy news coming out there. So that's basically the Amber stuff.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. How's Bitcoin Times? I haven't been keeping up with that recently.
Yeah. So, I mean, we, I've been so busy with everything else that I kind of dropped the ball on that. But like I've committed to doing minimum one edition a year. So I am going to do an edition this year. And okay. I've got six writers. We're tidying up the final bits of the articles now. But I can say that there's the writers this time are Jimmy Song, Giacomo Zucco, Eric Casson, Parker Lewis, myself, and Jeff Booth. So it is.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, man.
That's a lineup right there.
Sick lineup. Yeah. So, and I've read all the pieces. They're fucking awesome. You know, everyone's done. I've just got to finish up my piece. My piece is going to be How Utopias Lead to Dystopias. It's going to be fiery, man. So then I'll get it designed. I ideally, I want to have it out by sort of second week of December, but it'll be probably like, it'll be a Thanksgiving Christmas thing. So it'll okay. make
holidays.
Holiday Bitcoin time.
And the whole theme of the Bitcoin. Yeah, yes. the theme is Prometheus. It's like Prometheus rising. So it's like, you know, Bitcoin is a Promethean creation.
Yeah.
Stealing fire. So it's gonna be sick.
Hell yeah. Bringing fire to the people. Fix the money, fix the world, son.
Indeed. So that's the new stuff in this hood, man. I just hope that, you know, sort of the world turns like optimistic. I hope that at least some of the insanity subsides a little bit into the new year. I really want to be in the States for what do you call it? Bitcoin 2021.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, like Bitcoin 2019 was amazing. So like, it'll be really to catch up with everyone again. I haven't seen anyone in such a long time. So yeah, man, here's to hopefully a good close to 2020 and hopefully a fresh start in 2021 for many of us.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm right there with you. I'll see you at Bitcoin 2021. And like you said earlier aside from all the, you know, negativity and all the problems, is that like I do agree that we're living also in kind of the most exciting time, with the things that have been broken finally falling apart. We also have at our disposal the greatest opportunity that we've ever had.
We really do. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think our goal and our mission is don't let it go. Don't miss that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, seriously, man. Like I'm so humbled. I'm grateful and humbled that like, you know, despite the difficulties that we're going to face, and despite how because I honestly believe we ain't seen nothing yet. I think it's going to get a lot harder. I think we're going to see things that enrage the fuck out of all of us, like crazy privacy encroachments and all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, like having conversations even like this, and then anyone who's listening to this, like it just sort of, I think it kind of keeps us sane in a sense, and it kind of like reminds us, hey, that there is hope. You know, there is those of us who, because you know, on a daily basis, I'm surrounded by fucking hysterical idiots, right? Like, you know, you walk down the street. Like, I was in the shop the other day, and fuck, like, I had the mask down a little bit so I could breathe, and the lady's fucking freaking out. She's like, "Oh, dude, you put it up." It's like, what the fuck? So, like, that kind of stuff pisses me off. But then, like, having this kind of conversation, and you know, talking about first principles, and just like, I mean, even this conversation is just hilarious. Is like, we didn't have an agenda. We just started somewhere and we kind of went on all these tangents, but it's like, it's a conversation of substance.
Yeah.
Seriously. It was a conversation of a lot of substance though, that's the kind of stuff that gives me faith and hope that, you know, not only are we on the right path, but you know, we can keep each other sane, throughout the journey. That's going to be a difficult 2020s. Like, you know, this kind of content, everything that you're doing, is so incredibly important to keep people like on track and sane and like, you know, keeping the faith basically. And then knowing that out the other end, you know, next decade, that we're going to be the ones sort of emerging that have, you know, the capacity to actually physically you know, make a, you know, an influence on the world, to a greater extent than, you know, just building the, you know, because I think this year is going to be about, you know, building the Noah's Ark, or sorry, the last decade was building the Noah's Ark. This decade is going to be kind of floating on the Noah's Ark and making it functional.
Getting everybody on
and
board.
The following decade's going to be, And the following decade's going to be, you know, we kind of like everything else is burning. So now let's just come back and sort it out. So it gives me, you know, real like super humbled, grateful, and happy that it's, you know, people like you and like the Bitcoiners that are going to likely be the ones on the other end, man. It's amazing.
Ditto, man. Keep writing that good shit and I'll keep making audio out of it.
100%, bro. All right, my man. Thank you so much for having me on, bro.
Dude, thanks for coming on again. It's been too long. I'll hit you up again soon.
Indeed. Absolutely, bro. All right, man. Adios.
Absolutely love that combo. A great chat with Alex Fetsky. Always some amazing pieces by Alex more recently. And then also just some of the best ones on this show. Actually, the death of blockchain is still one of my favorites. And the fact that we talked about this in the last time that he was on the show, about the fact that he went to a crypto conference and then gave that speech to an audience that undoubtedly hated him furiously after it was over. really cool stuff. Leads the Bitcoin Times. And I will have all the links for this in the show notes. Don't forget to follow him on Twitter. Another huge thank you to our new sponsor, the open source, secure, Swiss-made hardware wallet, Bitbox. Just an awesome option for your Bitcoin cold storage, which you can find. Go through my link to let them know that I sent you there at guyswan.com/bitbox. And of course, for your mobile wallet solution, check out Hexa Wallet. That is hexawallet.io. Of course, search Hexa, H-E-X-A, on the Google Play or Apple App Store. And right there, you've got your cold storage and your mobile wallet solutions, thanks to the great teams that are bringing you Bitcoin Audible. With that, we'll close this one out with Bitcoin at 16,833 and climbing. Man, it has been a hell of a few weeks. Things are getting crazy bullish. And, you know, just like we talked about in this show, like I think this is going to refocus the world. It's going to put a totem in the middle of all of this chaos that people can depend on. And most importantly, allow us to refocus on life, on the things that are important, and find meaning and value in what we do. And I don't think its impact in that realm is small. A lot of change and uncertainty is coming to the world, and there is no better time than now to take responsibility, to trust yourself, to invest in your own knowledge and understanding, take your first steps to getting into Bitcoin so that you are ready to take advantage of the massive opportunities that our turbulent world is likely to present, and build your ark before the rain. I am Guy Swan. This is Bitcoin Audible. And until next time, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.